Yeah, I'm rolling a big one right now. shout out to all my people, allegedly. It's barely capable, Will. AKA Uncle Big Old Prehistoric Caveman, two finger typing behind the
big no tech.
The lab. Yeah, big. Yeah. All right. Welcome to the Heavy Old Podcast this week. I had to bring it on in. I had to bring it on into the home base. Hey, Tom. Tom's here.
Hey, what's up?
I'm at Tom's studio.
Yep.
I really did. They really did have to call me back home. I got a phone call. They said, "Bring it on in, man. You did too much this time last night." Big apologies. You're gonna hear in the next coming weeks. We've already rescheduled it. I had three guys, grown men with things to do. Time is not at a premium. Men with families and jobs. Careers even. On the line yesterday, ready to do a full-length podcast for your listening pleasure. And I blew it. My long story short, I don't know what's going on with the MacBook and with GarageBand. I want Colin Marston to hear that. I want all the producers to hear. I want Cody from Fix My Face and Sanguasugabog to hear that. Yeah, I fucked up on GarageBand and couldn't record a podcast. Couldn't record a Zoom call.
That's how we do most of it now.
Oh God. Yeah. So I frantically texted after canceling with these guys because I didn't want to waste their time. I was fumbling around for a while. I'm not going to get into the issue I had with everyone. We canceled on them, and I texted Tom. I took it out on him a little bit. Said this thing that you gave me, I fucked it up. Now I'm here at home base. Tom's gonna take. He's gonna put a new carburetor in my MacBook. We're gonna get running.
We'll see what it needs
on all cylinders. Yeah, it's really just. I'll explain. We'll get into it off air.
Yeah. We don't need to.
Well, I don't want Into the Combine and Necrosphere and all the other guys making fun of me now, man. I don't know how to run my own rig. Shout out to those guys. Good podcasts. Capable men.
Yes, fully capable men.
So now that I had to bring my laptop in for service to Tom, my Apple guy, I'm going to refrain from calling you the Freak Squad.
Yeah, don't call me an Apple guy.
Freak Squad.
I don't like that either.
My Freak Squad over here. When I used to rap many years ago, I had a line like, I don't need the Geek Squad, need the Freak Squad. That's why I'm death metal. Yeah. Oh boy. All right. So reining it in now. I'm at the shop. This coincided with us having a backlog of your voicemails submitted to the podcast that we haven't gotten to yet. So this is a special voicemail ketchup episode, man. We're gonna spill ketchup all over the place and get these voicemails popping. And I think to set the tone, I'm in a good mood because I know Tom just explained something else to me that made me feel stupid. I could have actually recorded last night and had a podcast on Zoom and recorded all the audio files separately. For people who know Zoom, maybe you work from home, whatever you do. I don't. I'm an idiot. I turn on the computer and like do the same kind of like 10 steps you could teach to a rhesus monkey that Tom and Justin taught me when they got me the computer.
I have put little stickers on the keyboards in the order of the rainbow. So it's just like you just like color coded. Like, oh yeah, let me think back to my youngest learning experience. Starting with red.
LeVar Burton, right. Reading Rainbow. Big shout, man.
Great
shout
guy. That. Great guy.
Welcome to the podcast, too, if he ever wants to do an interview. Doesn't even have to do a porno grind project if he doesn't want. So our first, we have one voicemail to set it off while we're in the mood, right?
Yep. Well, let's do it.
Let's get it popping.
Hey, Don. It's Tony Baldoni. Tony Baldoni is here. Don't worry about a thing. I'm back. Everything's all right, right? So, I just got in the car. Apologies if it sounds weird. I'm just locked up my ski and snow emporium, beautiful jackets, hot tubs, you name it. And shut off the lights. I was about to go home. I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go to the Curly Booger. I'm going to go meet up with Sal at the Curly Booger. Go have a nice dirty martini. How's that sound? Anyway, I figured I'd give you guys a call. I haven't checked it in a while. You know, see how you're doing, you know. Maybe give you a little recommendo. Here's a nice little recommendo. There's a beautiful Canadian grind band by the name of Swallowing Shit. And it's fucking jerk off. The name of the band is Swallowing Shit. They're from, you know what? I don't know exactly where in Canada, but they're from like the mid-90s. Just absolutely amazing songwriting. So check it out. There's an anthology. You can just pick up one CD that kind of collects all the 7 inches and all that. Definitely check it out. Singer went on to do Head Hits Concrete, another really crazy band, but I prefer Swallowing Shit personally. But definitely check out both those bands. And I think the bass player Propagandhi actually played in this band, which is kind of a crazy crossover. I mean, if you never listen to Propagandhi, you should definitely check them out too. Probably one of the best punk bands just out there. Really, really interesting songwriting. A lot of, like, it's very hectic. A lot of time signature shit. A lot of stop and goes, all that kind of shit. But just really well thought out. I would recommend the Cast System if you need one album from that. But anyway, check out Swallowing Shit. That's the main band that I'm trying to hype right now. And, you know, don't worry about nothing. God bless yourself.
Don't worry about nothing, and God bless yourself, Tone Baldoni.
Yeah, old Tony slips in and out.
That's a man on the check-in right there every time, man. I like that. He's always busy. He's always coming and going from the ski wear and hot tub emporium. He's got business. Maybe he's on the Jackie Robinson Parkway. I don't know what he's doing. He said a few things there. Apparently, there's a place in Canada, vast country. Our friends to the north, shout to them. There's just like a mid-90s region of Canada where you
just go and it's always mid-90s.
The 90s. There was that skit. I don't want to, like, on, what was it, Portlandia or something with the guy? Yeah, but yeah, that's actually in Canada. Mm. You can go to the 90s. Swallowing Shit. Never liked the band name. Always made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Much like AC. I'm not going to say the real, oh, Big Will Soft. He's not going to go there. Always liked the band. The band Swallowing Shit does have good. It's a great grindcore band. I remember Tone Baldone always bringing up this band way back in the day. Even when he had the little gambling spot, he used to play a lot of the Swallowing Shit. The guys didn't like it. But that's Tom, you want to maybe bring him in on a little?
Yeah, let's try it
one,
out.
One, two of that?
Sweet.
Okay, that is grindcore. It's a little bit of 90s, you know, screechy grindcore. Almost, I want to use the P word, the power violence word. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It's that like triplet blast kind of like dizzying riff that you'll find in a lot of that era grindcore. Very cool. Very cool.
Cool shit. Now, he mentioned Propagandhi. Are you familiar, Tom?
I've seen the name around. I honestly have never heard them.
Okay. You lean a little bit more into the punk realm than I. Okay. Although I do like a good punk record myself, I got to admit, I guess, kind of subgenre or lane of punk that Propagandhi's always been in, and the era, not necessarily my lane for like the little bit of punk I dabble in. I'm more of a metalhead to begin with. But I do know from friends of mine like Tone and Love Rich and the Gang that this is actually a pretty good band in terms of like musicality, and I know there's some stuff that even metalheads might find appealing. This man, you want to rip a second or two?
Yeah, let's do it.
I mean, we're not interviewing anybody on my computer. Yeah. We'll be right back.
You know, I can imagine myself kick-flipping to that, so it works.
Yeah, I can imagine kicking my flip-flops off and smoking something to that maybe one day on the beach. Nice, you know, again, not my usual lane, but these guys got a little something going on. I like them. They have a little raw quality to it. The musicality of the songwriting and the guitar, you know, they jump a little bit out of the they don't color within the lines too much, man. They do their own thing within the context of that music. And most important, I think lyrically... and aesthetically, they've always had a little bit more to say than your typical kind of like 25-year-old guy talking about high school romances, you know?
Sure, sure.
Like that you get with that genre a lot.
Yeah, I honestly thought the band was totally different than what I just heard, because I have seen the name. I've seen the name around for years. Never.
That was a little bit more ska influenced, yeah, and like poppy than I've come to expect. So we might not have picked the right track. Propagandi fans listening, feel free to drop us on a Heavy Hole podcast.
Yeah, let us know the good album.
Yeah, let us know the good album. Tone Baldone. Let us know the Tone Baldone. Call in again and tell us all about Propagandi. All right.
Do it.
And Strike Anywhere. That was those guys turned me on to a couple. Strike Anywhere was a good band. But moving forward with this voicemail episode, as a offering of apologies to the three busy family men whose time I callously wasted.
They're not going to listen to this episode.
Yeah, no, that's right. They're not. Yeah, why would they listen?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Totally want to listen to that.
Oh boy. So what's we have something else on deck though.
All right, huh? We got Wayne here.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Wayne from Alabama. Been listening to your Heavy Hole podcast since you interviewed my boys in Ecto Void a while back, and just wanted to shout out a touching moment, which is weird to say for death metal, in the interview with Fleshcore from Ukraine. Don't know if you guys caught that, but I wanted to call attention to it. You were talking with the drummer, and English wasn't very good. He was trying to talk about how he got going with the band, and he was fumbling for the right word in English, and then one of the guitar players chimed in and said, "The word you're looking for is destiny, my friend." And I just thought that was an awesome moment to listen to in the podcast where, you know, it kind of gets to the heart of why we all love underground extreme metal, because it gives us an outlet, helps us cope with all the suffering, and just brings people together in this crazy world we live in. And so that's all I wanted to say. Just hope some other people caught that. It was a great moment to hear in the podcast, and props to all the guys in Fleshcore, Big Will, and all the crew. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Wow. You know, it's funny. Like, I live within my own bubble, where I go to work, I do this podcast, I play shows, but like I don't realize that people actually listen to this podcast. Like I don't, like in my day-to-day thinking sometimes, like I don't, like, yeah. I know this, but like you don't realize that there's people you don't even know out there, like listening in detail, right? Like obviously there are, like I respect and acknowledge all of our listeners, but it's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
in your day-to-day life, you lose track of things.
It's an abstraction from like when we put it up and we see the amount of downloads. It's like, oh cool, this pulled a certain amount of numbers, but we don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just nice to hear something like that. That was a really nice, sincere voicemail, Wayne. Thank you very much.
That's where I'm going. Wayne from Alabama, shout out to you, and thank you for your voicemail. Shout out to the guys from Ecto Void, great band. Go back and listen to our interview with Ecto Void if you haven't, and check out their material. Yeah, man, when that was a great moment. I do remember that moment in the Fleshcore interview, man. And yeah, like you said, man, I mean, I you know, I could wax poetic about my own bands and destiny and you know things being synchronized and what this and that, but yeah, man. And yeah, that interview with Fleshcore, man, you know, obviously it was like, it was real special, real important to me for obvious reasons, man. And like you say, in this crazy world with everything that we got going on, man, I'm really glad I reached out to those guys and they graciously gave me the time to conduct that interview. And people should go back and listen to that if they haven't, support that band. Yeah, man, you know, in this crazy world of extreme metal and, you know, like you said, man, it's you know, a touching moment in death metal. It's kind of ironic, but, you know, it's, I'm over it, man. It's 2023, man. This is our lives. This is the music we love. We put our heart and soul into this. You know, I've buried many, many people that I knew from metal shows and was even in bands with. And You know, even if you're just someone who goes to shows and is a metal fan who collects the stuff, man, it affects every part of your life and most likely affects who you associate with and even who you create a family with or you know, who you choose to hook up with, you know, whatever, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, man. You know, like, for people, it has varying degrees. There's a whole, like, spectrum of how metal can affect your lifestyle and all that, man. But it is real life, man, including all the ups and downs and personal situations, man, you know?
Very true. All right, thanks again, Wayne.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Cody. Just wanted to call in. It's been a long time. And I wanted to give a shout out for Amityville Music Hall. I came up to New York back in October for the Suffo IB show that took place there. Got to see Will on stage. Went and got a bagel, ate a slice, did all the stuff I'm supposed to do, went in Long Island, and then eventually went up to see Revocation in Rochester before leaving New York. So if you have any questions on Amityville Music Hall, don't ask, just go. It's worth it. The other thing, you know, you were talking about Nurgle and the crimes or the charges he's facing for stepping on the Virgin Mary photo. And it just got me thinking about all the different forms of expression and arts that we have and kind of what the differences are. Why is it okay to probably talk about stepping on the Virgin Mary's face in a song, but if you put it in a photo form and share it on social media, it all of a sudden becomes a crime. And I really kind of relate to this in a lot of ways because I'm not a big horror movie person, but people seem to understand horror movies more than heavy metal in a lot of ways. I work in a very professional setting and I hear people talk about horror films all the time, but if I talk about going to a heavy metal show, people are quick to kind of other me or give me a glare that gives me the sense that they might be passing some judgment. Now, if I had just said, oh, I went and saw The Exorcist, they'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm just not into that. But when it comes to music or different forms of media and how we express that, people tend to take it differently. So Nurgle could probably talk about those things, but when he puts it into a photo form, it changes everything. And I'd be curious to hear what your guys' thoughts are on that. As always, thanks for the podcast. Good listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Cody, and it was great to meet you. Thank you for the beer. Appreciate it, man. Tom, you want to touch on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I have some thoughts regarding, like, horror movie people. I feel like people who are really into horror, or not even really into horror, just, like, they like to talk about how they're kind of ostracized by society in some way. Like every document, I watch a lot of documentaries and shit like that. And like, as I'm racking my brain and thinking about it, like one that comes to mind is like, Hail the Deadites, which is like the Evil Dead fan base, documentary. I think it's on Shudder now or Amazon, but regardless, like these people like self-identify as like outliers, but they don't really actually come off as outliers. And I think the same thing kind of goes with heavy metal, but people wear it on their sleeve a lot more with heavy metal. So yeah. I don't know. Obviously I can't tell other people what to think about how they exist in society, but yeah, that's a good point though, with like how one format is like totally acceptable. In fact, like, you know, Exorcist is your example. That movie like blew the lid off of America film for like, you know, 5 years. Like that was in fucking drive-ins for I just 8-something years following its release, and it was just like crazy. And yeah, you see the horror, like we're desensitized to that shit. Like, you know, movies like they're coming out with another Insidious, cool, you know, it's like who knows what goes on. I just saw the new Evil Dead movie and it was gruesome as fuck. It was so gruesome. But as soon as you slap like imagery like that on an album, it does become a little more taboo. So I know what you mean.
Yeah, well, look at it, because even things like the Purge and all those kind of like quote unquote torture porn, like because like there was a point where some of those movies that are like horror, quote unquote, it's not even horror, like it's not traditional horror cinema anymore. It's kind of like this like shock value, how like real and disturbing kind of, you know,
Yeah.
Like a lot of it, I feel like, started with, like, Hostel and kind of just, like, ramping it up and then also making that style more popular across, like, Hostel a broader
Saw.
Audience.
Yeah. It's like, those movies, like Hostel, Saw,
Saw, The Purge, yeah.
Those movies, they kind of just do something like, it's the most base value style of committee writing that you can do in a movie. Like, what if we lock someone in a room and tell them they can get out, but they have to saw off their own arm? Like, that's it. And then we watch it unfold. And then does he do it? Does he not? It turns into like a will they, won't they of if someone's going to hurt themselves, as opposed to like
yeah.
two teenagers they might kiss in high school. Like, it's weird because it's the same dynamic, just turned gross.
They took like the mechanism of horror movies that works in people's brain,
yeah.
and like dumbed it down from like technical death metal to like porno grind. They just like the most base yeah. level.
Yeah, and I like stupid horror shit too. So like, I'm not above watching anything like that at all, but like, I'd rather watch a movie where they try to make like a concept come together, not really so much like Human Centipede, where it's just like, look what we're gonna do to people.
Like, yeah. I will admit, I did watch the third one.
All right, I heard the third one was good.
I don't know if I would use that word,
or maybe the second one.
All right, but yeah. Well, it's the one that's more like. Is winking it, at you a little bit, I would imagine, from what I... Cause
is it the prison one, or is it the
yes,
one...
Yes, the prison
one. Okay, yeah. Yeah,
it's, like, very... In a lot of ways, it reminded me, and when I read up on this series, you know, at a certain point, because I'll just like I do with the podcast, I just kind of obsessively Wikipedia and Google certain topics and look up, you know, shit if I'm obsessed with them, and, you know, different movies and media things, and one of them was the Human Centipede series. Probably Adam was talking about it, maybe. And I read up on it. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to sit through that, man. And I read the third one, and somebody compared it to the prison sequence of Natural Born Killers, which is fair enough in conversation. If you want to, I'm not going to sit here and you know say that it's, you know, it's either or is whatever. But like, but I did have this like interest in it after I read that, and it's a compelling film in its own way, and it is kind of funny in a very dark, weird, exploitive way, man. But yeah, I typically though that stuff is not for me, man. And like, it just seems. I had a guy, a coworker of mine, for a while. Good guy. I got along with him. You know, good people. He wasn't into heavy metal really as much. Like, he was into like kind of like just commercial metal and stuff. But he was deep on anything horror. But he didn't know a lot of the old school shit that I knew. And he just kind of was like, I feel like he was, because he was younger than me, too. He was a guy in his early 30s, probably grew up on Walking Dead and, like we said, you know, Saw and Hostel and all that sort of thing. And he knew all these crazy movies that were on Netflix the last several years and all this sort of stuff, but nothing I ever even heard of. And it was like, yeah, it was like there's this thing where in the 90s, you really were kind of part of this outlier culture if you were into that shit. Or into underground, like indie music of any kind, whether it's death metal or hardcore. Or,
yeah, I mean, you know, Saw was basically like Lamb of God.
Yeah, it's like, so it's like, I'm not trying to go on a rant about how the 90s were sicker and you had to be there, but I'm just saying, like, media and the concept of extremity, metal, punk, hardcore, and then, like, you know, cinema with like horror movies. Not that the 90s was a particularly great time for horror, you know, that's arguable, but I'm just making the point that like, if you were really into that sort of subculture thing, then you were an outlier. But it gradually became this thing where to be a movie dork, or to be a something like noun dork or whatever, you know what I mean, to be like, to be really into some subculture became cool. That's the hipster thing, right?
Sure.
Like, you know, everyone has some little niche subculture or thing or genre that they're into super, and that's, in a way, it's done great things for death metal and grindcore and gore grind, because I feel like that's how a lot of people ended up here. Nowadays everyone wants to have their own niche thing, myself included. I'm not going to act like I'm, you know, any different. Like, everyone wants to be unique.
I totally do. I am quite opinionated with like media that I take in.
Yes.
But part of the fun in it for me is like being to articulate what it is you don't like about it. It's not just like, I have been guilty of being like, all right, that band's too big right now, I'm not even going to listen to them. I have done that. And I don't think that's not good at all.
It's almost a rule for me to not listen to a band if they get really big.
But like, yeah, being to articulate like what sucked about a movie and like what didn't suck about a movie, or you know, with any other form, is it's kind of fun. Like I went and saw that movie Renfield in the theaters.
I'm curious about that.
Oh my god. God, I wanted to punch everyone in the face there. Mm. It was so bad. It was like, because here's what bothers me about it. Without any spoilers, it is a movie by committee. You could tell there's too many people going, we have to achieve certain things in this film. Mm-hmm. All they needed to do was watch Mr. Magoo by like, you know, with Leslie Nielsen. And go, this is the archetype for what we need to achieve. Instead, they gave Renfield feelings. And my God, the whole thing just melted from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And they had to give him superpowers out of nowhere. Like, Renfield is just a fucking crazy idiot.
Yeah.
That's his whole character.
Giving the monster feelings, humanizing the monster. That's what they're trying to do to death metal, Tom.
Yeah, but it was so bad. It was just so weird. Like, there was like this... I won't get into it, but either way, I sat through Renfield and I fucking hated it. I took notes in my head the entire time. And as soon as we got home, I just spilled all my thoughts for the next 2 hours to my wife. And I admit that it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It is fun to be disappointed.
Shout out to your wife for listening to you.
Yes, I don't know how.
I know what it's like to be an opinionated man, like talking to a girlfriend who like is just kind of being like nicely listening, but like does like could care less about my opinions. on the subtleties of genres of music.
Right,
like,
right.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, I don't explain music to her. Yeah. That would be torture, but...
Yeah. But, what I was going to say, though, this whole concept of horror movie fans kind of having it easier than metal fans, like, it is a real thing. I think it's, like, for some reason, when it becomes music... It seems to say more to, or people infer more about your personality and your character based on the actual like lyrics or art or whatever the initial imprint of it is. But if it's like a horror movie, it's like, oh, he's a cinema buff. You know what I mean?
I think music that kind of dates back to like just stereotyping people based on people wanting to be stereotyped, like as far back as the 50s as I can think off the top of my head, or even like jazz and ragtime and shit, like,
okay,
and that was even earlier than that. Yeah, so you have like these people who did the music enveloped an entire counterculture.
You're right, because I'm 40 years old. When I was in high school, my parents were pretty accepting of anything musically, man. My parents were baby boomers that grew up on Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin and Black Sabbath and the 80s. And like, yeah, so it's like for them, for me to be into Cannibal Corpse and Slayer, it was like, all right, just as long as you're passing your classes. You know what I mean, man? Like whatever, you know? And I think like that, but in the 80s, in contrast, like, you know, we've talked at length about the Satanic Panic period and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You can go back and listen to our interview with author Jesse Pollock, who wrote the book The Acid King, about a famous Satanic Panic related case here on Long Island. We did an interview with him a while ago. But so back in the 80s, metalheads and a lot of young suburban and urban metalheads were trying to set themselves as outliers in very real ways with drugs, criminal activity. There were, you know, they were also good kids that were metalheads back then. But it's like, yeah, heavy metal was a little more dangerous at a certain point.
But I mean, yeah, even the glam metal kids and stuff like that. They wore long sleeves. And the punk era. Like, so, you look at like the first wave of punk in England. It was like those kids were not fucking around.
So maybe there's like this cultural kind of stigma left over where even if you're like, you know, like Cody said, he's a professional person, he's at a day job, but maybe people just look at him and they're like, oh yeah, when he was in his teens and his 20s, he was probably a scumbag. He cleaned up. He could, you know, like people put that on you with heavy metal, I guess, man.
Sure. Yeah.
It is. It's like interesting to talk about that dynamic though, that like, if I just, like, say I went to work and I just told my coworkers, like, oh, yeah, I watched Dawn of the Dead with my buddy over the weekend. And, you know, like, it's just like, oh, okay, man, that's normal. But, like, I went to go see Ghoul and Exhumed over the weekend. Well, you know, check this out on YouTube. This is what they do live. And this is their album cover. It's like, for some reason then, I've crossed the line of, like, normal. Like, now I'm into weird shit. You know what I mean? That's interesting.
Yeah. No, it's a fun topic to talk about. Cody, very excellent voicemail.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Cody. Yeah, I could riff off that for a while, but I think that's pretty much where I stand on it, man. Big shout to you, Cody, and all you've done for the podcast. He's checked in a lot over the years, man. Big shout to a longtime listener, Patreon pledge, and real life supporter, going to the shows, paying the door money, bringing a crew of friends who also pay the door money and attend the show. Awesome. And buy merch. Harrison Clark.
What up, Harrison?
Huntington resident himself.
Yeah. He's one of the dudes.
Yeah.
He's in.
Single-handedly signed off at an executive level at the Staples Corporation for us to get these business cards. Thank you, Harrison. Accomplished young man. Harrison was just telling me about a band over the weekend. We shout out to him. He came out to the Anal Birth show over there. And shout out to the guys from Necropsy Odor and Mephitic Corpse. I'm an idiot. Bowel Erosion. We had a great time over there at Shaker's Pub, as always, man. But what I really want to talk about, Harrison Clark's told me to check out this band, Centipede Abyss. You can go to centipedeabyss.bandcamp.com and check out their album, M-U-K-A-D-E. I'm not going to attempt to mispronounce that. So we're gonna take you for a ride right now through it, and then we're gonna give you our take. Wild stuff.
Yeah.
Hard to compare to something else. Lori Bravo, one of the founding members of Nuclear Death. Very compelling personality in the underground metal scene and also a pioneer. Open invitation to this podcast. I am going to reach out. We were just talking about that. Probably should have before.
That'd be good. And Harrison texted me about this night. I totally blanked on checking this out, but... Dan, this is kind of like what I'm imagining happens in Colin Marston's brain sometimes, like how he falls asleep.
Yeah. This is if you ask Colin Marston to like to do one of those dream like AI, you know, images or something, man. Yeah. That was wild. I would obviously have to sit with this a little bit more to give you like a more detailed opinion, but I'm very interested in this. I'm going to check out the full album when I have some leisure listening time. Thank you, Harrison, for shooting this our way. Wow, that was a lot going on. Her vocals sound great.
They do.
I got to admit, for someone who's been in the game for a minute, she's got staying power.
Yeah, shrill, but with power.
Like, yeah.
It's very intentional. Piercing
tight performance too, especially for music that's a little off the wall structurally.
Give that a listen.
I'm definitely very interested in this. I like what I've heard so far, and I think a lot of our listeners, you know, you mentioned Colin Marston, people who are on that kind of spectrum of things,
right?
The Colin Marston scene, the Behold the Arctopus style, the, you know, the kind of
you can't have odd time signatures if there aren't any time signatures.
They might have something to dine on with this one as well.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say, man. Thank you, Harrison, for bringing that to our attention. I like that, man. Cool. And again, I have her on the long list. I'm going to reach out, man.
All right. Well, I have a recommendation. It's been a long time since I've talked about anything I actively like, I guess.
In general, like in life?
In life. Always poo-pooing on Renfield.
That's the vibe I got from Renfield, yeah.
All right. There's this band called Da Ava. They're from Philly. They just came out with an album on 20 Bucks Spin, I think sometime last year. The album is called Through Sheer Will and Black Magic.
Oh, yeah.
So this album, it caught my ear. This is the most feral thrash album I think I've ever heard.
Hmm.
Now, they are self-described as black thrash metal, which I get. It is very dark, but it's not the black that has me drawn to it. It's the style in which they're playing. They're playing so fast, and they seem to choose when they want to be tight and not. Like, they kind of let it all fall down the staircase.
Okay.
And then they rip it up sometimes where it's really tight thrash. Really atmospheric kind of black metal vocal on top, which is the affirming, yes, we have some black metal influence. The imagery, I mean, the album's called Through Sheer Will and Black Magic, so we know the imagery is going to be very dark.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy this.
Yeah.
I would venture to question, is there a difference between black and thrash and quote-unquote first wave black metal?
I don't think so, personally.
We're going to get bomb threats from European guys after I said that. I apologize. Sure. But
I submitted too easily to that what seems to be very obvious observation.
Yeah, but listen, Finland, we love you, all right? Norway, we love you. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. This is kind of like I prefer this type of black metal, I would say, that kind of sits somewhere within the... like the first wave, maybe, but like it's the first wave, but it's kind of like they're informed by the second wave. And so, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like this band. One of the things, although as much as I love Venom, as much as I love a lot of those bands, Bathory, Sarcophago, this band, like you said, they choose, I think, sometimes to let it get a little spilly, let it get a little loose, but
yeah,
they have the benefit of being at a point historically where they can kind of like learn from where some of those bands maybe were doing things, pioneers, but they certain things in a juvenile fashion, certain things maybe, you know what I mean? Like, all I'm saying is that some of those pioneering black metal albums, as much as we love them, you bring them to work, they're not going to get the same reaction as The Exorcist. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think the guys look cool on the cover of that Sarcophago album. I'm an outlier. I'm just making the point that these guys maybe, I think, stylistically, musically, seem a little more streamlined. There's a little bit more maybe maturity and artistic taste to what they're doing while still keeping it very stripped down, raw, and true to that generation. I think this is really cool stuff, man. And I gotta add this, it's funny that we should bring this up today, and we're talking about this today, because I was just I got a message from behind the scenes. Big shout to the Necrosexual, our fellow extreme music journalist and musician from down there in the Philly area. Apparently he's in a project with somebody from Deva. Do these guys use black metal names? I don't want to reveal
no anything.
Okay, Eddie from Deva.
Okay,
yeah,
the vocalist.
Yeah, apparently Eddie from Deva is in a band called Wild Beyond.
Oh, here they are.
Wild Beyond.
Huh.
And if the Necrosexual is in that band, they definitely deserve that name, Wild Beyond.
Okay? Yeah.
Is he in the picture?
Yeah, there he's in the picture.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah, he's in.
There's a stripped down Necrosexual.
He's in.
For you.
He's in civilian mode.
Incognito.
Yeah, he joined them and Morgul Blade around the same time in 2021. I imagine around the time Basilisk disbanded, or he parted ways with them. His old band Basilisk I was a fan of too, but he's in two great bands now, Morgul Blade and Wild Beyond, in addition to the Necrosexual project itself, which is its own entity. Now, this Wild Beyond, I'm curious. Are we gonna let's take it for a spin, Tom?
Well, you know what? I'm gonna play a little bit of this Da Ava.
Oh, my bad.
No, it's all good.
So I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm very excited.
Here, check this out, everyone.
Side of Capricorn.
Let's check out Wild Beyond right here. I like it.
Definitely appropriate to the name. That is, it feels grounded in more traditional black metal, and I would even venture to say grind. But yeah, there's something kind of technical and weird going on, and kind of that is some interesting stuff, man. I like that. I'd have to sit with that a little bit more, man.
It's definitely not shying away from the technicality, which I like. Just go with it. Sometimes you write a riff and it's a little funky, just play the riff.
And it's,
and it might not translate as easy to the listener, but it's gonna perk them up.
For something with those kind of like complicated technical riffs and that frantic pace, it managed to kind of stay in its own box. It's very tight, very easy. Like it's easy to listen to, despite having those characteristics. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's more of like the sonic value isn't totally overwhelming in terms of like it's not too fast, it's not too blown out or anything like
that. And it's tight. It's played tight for what it for how kind of like frantic and you know, spasticky kind of get. It's tight. It's very, very well performed, man. Big shout out to the Necrosexual doing it big.
Wild Beyond.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we have beyond that?
I have a I have a recommend though. I wanted to bring in something a little bit more old school for the listeners. Mythos, MYTHOS, Molded in Clay, demo 1993 in particular. Because it's been reissued recently on nuclearwinterrecords.com. And Tom, you just remarked to me, what did you just say about this?
This album sounds fantastic because, well, firstly, it's not an album. It's a demo from 1993. And I'm a little taken back over how good it sounds.
I would venture to guess that that's because it was recorded by kind of infamous cult recording engineer in Finland. I'm going to get this name so wrong. Please forgive me. Ati Kortelainen, who is the engineer who runs the Tico Tico studio in Kemi, Finland, which is, I'll just go through the list. Shout out to Metal Archives, End Ocean, Abaddon Incarnate, Adromalex, Psychostasia, and Seven albums were recorded there. Seven was an EP.
Yeah.
The list goes on and on and on, man. I think it was Demigod. Belial was there. I'm looking at Demigod. Slumber of Sullen Eyes was recorded there. This is just a Excrements. Famed Scorched EP was recorded there, which maybe we'll get into. But again, that studio put out a lot of my favorite old school Finnish death metal albums, and this production speaks to that. It doesn't sound exactly like those albums, but you kind of, there's a vibe, man. It's kind of, you know, same way those Morrisound, Scott Burns albums all had a similar vibe. Like, you can kind of rely on the quality, is what I would say here. The brand quality of the studio and the engineer. It's a little rougher because it was originally a demo than maybe some of those albums, but you can hear it. What I like about this is, as good as it sounds, it still has kind of a muffled, bass-heavy quality to where you have to listen just slightly harder to get the melodies out.
I'm getting that, but it also has this like really shiny top end that's coming through all the hi-hats.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the overheads and things like that. Like, it's very real. It sounds like a room. Even more so than like Psychostasia, which I think is a beautifully recorded album, and it sits really well. This sounds like it's cut from the same cloth. It just has a magical top end.
This has got more food in his beard.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
this is a little bit. This one just came in from outside. It didn't have a shower yet. Yeah, it's rough around the edges, but it's beautiful.
Yep.
Highly recommended. And if you're like me, someone who, you know, is a sucker for all that old Finnish death metal, the Rotting Ways to Misery book, I highly recommend that. I enjoyed it. People should read that for a better understanding of the old school Finnish death metal scene and where it comes from. This is just kind of like another example, and maybe one that's a little harder to find. Maybe one that if you're already on the Adramalek and Demigod and all those bands train, maybe you haven't turned over this stone yet. So highly recommended, man. I'm just going to leave it at that. Really cool old school Finnish death metal release. Mythos Molded in Clay Demo 1993.
Check it out. So sick.
Yeah, dude. Again, I don't want to talk about it too much. I think the listeners of the show who know where I'm at and, you know, kind of know about the Finnish death metal stuff, man, they're going to see where I landed with that one, man. And on that note, just so you can't say that Big Will is some sort of slouch, and I just because I fucked up an interview yesterday and Tom has to take that hammer on the desk to my MacBook.
Oh, it's going to my head.
And my left hand in punishment. Just because that happened, we're not going to phone in this episode. That's a pun because of the voicemails.
Right.
I'm sorry. I am giving you two of my best and most obscure Finnish OG death metal recommendations right now. The other one being the band Excrement with their classic Flesh and Blood demo from 1993, which was independently released on cassette, but has since been, for your listening pleasure, re-released on 7-inch vinyl and cassette by Old Skull Productions and Rotting Misery. I guess that's a label named with the same namesake there. This is just dirty. Again, I love this for some of the similar reasons I kind of was just talking about that other band Mythos. Same era, same year, you know, and it's just, this is for my real deal underground death metal heads that kind of have a knack for that Finnish stuff, just like me, even from before it kind of blew up a few years ago. And you know, obviously Demolich was always on their own tip. Like, there's no one nowadays there's bands that have an influence of Demolich, more so, but back in the day, Demolich was kind of the only band that really sounded like that. But so when you say Finnish death metal, I think a lot more in terms of like a style of bands like Demigod, Adramalek, and now these two bands, Mythos. And now I want you to check out Excrement, and I want to get Tom's, take on it.
All right. Going fresh.
Run the road.
sick. I like this. I've never heard it before. I will be listening to this again. Big fan of the drum stuff. I wonder if the guys from Bloodbath ever heard this band.
Likely. They're probably old school dudes. I don't know.
No, I'm just kidding around. I feel like this is it's like a similar kind of vein for me in a good way. I don't have anything bad to say. Also, one of the songs on here, Corpse Fucking Art.
Hmm.
That's an Italian band.
Yeah,
I brought them in a long time ago, and I guess they
interesting to know. Yeah, interesting to know.
Yeah, this is cool. I really like that drum sound though. Overall, like that kick is like
yeah.
It's tight. It's like super punchy, but also tiny, like palatable.
I don't have on Metal Archives who recorded this. It's an independent demo, so it might have even been recorded by the band. I don't know. Obviously, this is a little bit different from the Mythos demo and from Demigod and Adromalik. This is a little bit more, I would compare this a little more to like the influence of Carcass. Yeah. And maybe some of your more old school kind of crossover hardcore punk thrash bands, like converted into death metal, which you get a lot in the early 90s.
Mm.
And reading that Rotting Ways to Misery book, you really learn how big of an influence Carcass played on not just the Finnish bands, but all the bands of this era that kind of had this style, man. And this sounds like these guys maybe had a little bit more grindcore, a little bit more hardcore and thrash influence in the writing and the kind of the rhythms that they would, you know what I mean? Like, it's catchy stuff. Very tight, like you pointed out with the drums. But also really sick stuff, man. Really cool to listen to. And in this day and age where all this old school stuff is being reissued, this is one that was definitely worthy of it. They had an EP, Scorched, after this that was recorded at Tico Tico Studios, the studio I just told you about in the last recommendation, the famed Finnish studio that recorded all, you know, the Demigod and all that stuff. That is a little bit harder to access. It hasn't been reissued, but you can definitely find it if you look
for
it.
That's actually, so that one's on streaming. So you could pull that down on Spotify or whatever, but
Big Will doesn't stream music.
Yeah, well, you know.
Sorry.
For those who grind the old way.
Unless it's on Bandcamp. But interesting. So yeah, so I would recommend that Scorched EP too. They had the Flesh and Blood, what was it? The Flesh and Gore? Well, I'm sorry. Now I'm mixing it up. They had the Flesh and Blood demo and the Scorched EP, both of which are recommended. Great band. Maybe not as mysterious and atmospheric as some of your old school Finnish death metal bands, but not all of them were, man. And that's another thing I learned from this Rotting Ways to Misery book. I always prided myself in knowing a wealth of old school Finnish death metal bands because I enjoyed that style. And I realized I didn't know shit, as I often do doing this podcast.
As you get older, man.
Yeah, there's a wealth of black metal history in Finland, as well as bands that maybe were, like I said, a little bit more on the Carcass and on the American death metal influenced style of things. And this is one of them. So anything else, Tom? I think that's it, man.
No, that's all. I do dig it. First taste right here. I sign off.
100%, man. We already played it for the people.
We did. We can play it again, actually. Fuck it. Who cares?
Let's give them a taste of the Scorched EP, can we? That's on Spotify. Let's chill.
I have Spotify right here.
Let's chill.
I'm going to do that. Probably gotta use that music to play it out
That intro, beautiful, classic old school Finnish death metal intro. I hope Amorphis does not sue them after this episode of Heavy Hole Podcast comes out and they hear that.
Well, it is beautiful.
A difference though, because Privilege of Evil came out, the Carillion Isthmus came out in 92, Privilege of Evil in 93, if I got it right there. And Excrement goes in 94. They record this. So it's kind of like you can almost hear, in my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, you can almost hear how big that Amorphis influence started blowing up. I mean, just in that intro. And then after the intro, they go back into some more dirty grind influenced style stuff, I would
sure.
say.
Sure. I also like the sound of the demo a little bit better. Like sonically, I think it had a little more charm to it.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough. Yeah. Charm is the word, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes without saying. It's like, you know, you go to a studio and it doesn't matter who's behind the board, per se. Mm. There is a gamble.
Yeah.
You know, the performance and what room they put you in and who knows. There's a million factors.
You're right, Tom. Always a gamble. And on that note, you just drop me off with a red carpet leading to my segue, sir. You never know. You go somewhere. You never know what you get. You don't know who's going to be there. Doesn't matter who's on stage. Doesn't matter who's in the crowd. You gamble because you never know who's working security. Are these people vetted? Are these people certified? Are they trained? Mm. Hopefully. I've met a lot of great security guys.
Yeah, me too.
And gals
hey.
Throughout my life.
Chris McCarthy was just down here not too long ago.
It's great people. Working the doors, working the security people of the world. Mm-hmm. Love them. Maybe some of the listeners know where I'm going already, man. Recently, well, the Black Dahlia murder and terror are on a tour together, as they are. You should go check that out in your local scene, wherever they come to, if the tour's still going on when you read this. Was recently banned, along with possibly all hardcore bands, from Wrigley Theater. Out there in old California. I'm getting this off of Lamb Goat. Okay. It's fair and balanced news. That's their tagline, Lamb Goat.
Yeah.
Last week during a show at Wrigley Theater in Fort Worth, Texas, a security guard felt the need to grab the mic and shout, "I don't think so," before handing the mic back to terror vocalist Scott Vogel. The story has since gone viral, even being covered by Heavy Hole Podcast. Oh, they mentioned, no, they really didn't say that. Including, which brought fans to call out the venue for past practices. It blew up online, and then other people started calling out old shit that happened, and da-da-da. But Wrigley Theater stated their policy in a response to Lamb Goat. Wrigley Theater Complex has a zero tolerance for stage diving, kicking, punching, windmilling, ejected. The people in the crowd were attempting to jump the barricades to get on the stage. Only one ejection for kicking a minor in the front row. Our security did a great job and exhibited a lot of restraint after being hit, punched by a very rowdy crowd. There's a lot there, man, to unpack. I've seen security guards kind of be a little overzealous.
Seen that a couple times. Not often, but it does happen.
It happens. I will say like 99% of security I've met performing underground death metal across the United States have been decent, friendly, or at the least professional.
Yes.
If not friendly. But it does happen. There have been a few instances. And here's the thing too, coming from Long Island. And somebody was just like talking to me about this the other day at like the Anal Birth show. It's like, even like shows that in other states you would not see crowd killing and ninja stuff on Long Island, it's like prevalent at like the most, like, I feel like you could book like a folk metal. I feel like you could book like Corp Lacani on Long Island and there would still be some kid in a Tommy Hilfiger fucking like visor and fucking, you know, like from 92 with Jenko jeans out there just like crowd killing them and punching people in the face when the guy brings the flute out or whatever,
donkey kicking people.
Yeah, it had, dude. I don't like it. Oh, Big Will's from Long Island, he doesn't like crowd killing, he's a pussy. Look, get his internal bleeding shirt back, take it out of his closet. You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, all I'm saying is I'm too old. I got problems with my back. I'm fat. I wear glasses. I stay in the back. I stay by the merch booth. I stay by the bar. I've never been the one for that, man. And there's those people that just want to bring it to like corners of the club that are nowhere near the mosh pit at times. They want to knock over the fucking merch tables and shit, man. I'm sorry. Am I old? Because I find that annoying. You punched a fucking 15-year-old girl in the face because you like a band. I'm sorry. Am I ignorant because I find that distasteful?
I believe you are ignorant.
Yeah.
According to Long Island, the Long Island lore.
Do I need to do better? Because I don't understand. I don't know. I mean,
I never really cared for it. I'm also like enough of an alcoholic where I'm just at the bar anyway.
Oh boy.
So
Tom offered me a nice glass of water. I didn't push the beer on him today.
No. I'm trying to take it easy.
Yeah. That's what I do at shows. I drink water and just try to stay alive
over. I mean, I actually haven't even talked to you since I went to the that beer and metal fest, the old Decibel Beer and Metal Fest.
That's right.
It's been a while, yeah. That whole thing is oriented around getting hammered. And you know what? When you have a giant venue like that, and you have all that space in the world, it lends itself to these crazy pits because you can kind of stand back a bit and create distance.
The crazy people find one another.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is great. If you guys want to hospitalize one another, I got a job. Most shows I got, like, unless it's a Friday or Saturday night show, I probably got to be at work at like 7 the next day. I'm not trying to walk in with a black eye and get a fucking bum knee from getting fucking kicked.
Sorry, it's not a booger. It's just blood. But I went into the pit for about 30 seconds during Black Dahlia's set.
No.
I was with young Ian. Ian was out there. He was very drunk and having a wonderful time.
Yeah,
good for him.
Shout out to young Ian.
What size is this venue that we're talking about? This Wrigley Field, right? They weren't playing baseball.
No. I think they still allow a little bit of the old elbows in baseball, hopefully. But I don't know. But from what I gather from the story that I read and all this, it's a fairly sizable venue. To have Black Dahlia Murder and Terror co-headlining a venue, it's a big theater-style place, I'm sure.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, yeah, the crowd, I feel like if you're booking Black Dahlia Murder and Terror, your security staff and the promoter who's bringing those bands in should be a little bit like, should kind of be like in the know.
They should,
of what goes on at these shows. Like, as much as I don't like crowd killing, if I chose to go see that show, I would be like, as I said, away from the pit air. I would be safely in an area.
It's part of the culture, and the security detail should know the culture.
Yeah, so a kid in a Born of Osiris shirt doesn't, like, knock me out without even trying to because he did a backflip into me. I don't want that. That's not part of my concert-going, like, bucket list, you know?
There is part of me that, I don't want to be hit by that kid in champion shorts and the Born of Osiris shirt, but...
Yeah, he was just doing a backflip into random people, but he knocked me out, you know?
I don't mind it. I guess I'm selfish enough to say it is kind of funny to watch.
A few months, and I related the story on the podcast at Shaker's Pub on Long Island. A kid did some sort of little fucking duck down spin up. He fucking caught me with the back of his fist, knocked my glasses went flying. And I said to myself the next day, I was all the way in the back of the room, but I said, you know what, Will? You know Long Island too good.
Yeah.
I said, you should have just fucking been drinking a beer over at the fucking bar with the other old guys.
You need some straps for your glasses. Something that'll keep you on there during the shows.
I used to have straps on my glasses at shows, but that era of my life is over, sir. The straps might have to come back. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. You're too close to the pit. Sometimes you bring it on yourself. I woke up the next day. I said, you know what, Will? You brought that on yourself. That's it. So, but at the same time, it's like these big venues book, like, you're telling me this is the first time this venue has booked these style of bands? Obviously not. Other bands that have played there before got in the mix online and stuff. So it's like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around, like, why do you keep booking these shows at your theater if you have such a contentious relationship with, like, what the audience does?
Oh, where you make your money.
Yeah, and with the way the audience acts is, like, it's, you know what, like, you should know if you're, somebody at that theater had to know what Terror and Black Dahlia Murder are going to bring with the audience. Like,
sure.
I'm sorry.
And the band's called Terror.
Did Terror? I mean, Terror's been around forever. They might have played there before. I don't know, but it's the whole thing just strikes me as like the venue is. They could have had a point if they. If things had happened differently. Sure. The best part about all of this was the Black Dahlia murder running with the typo that the venue made online. And they had a nice new band name, Who Dis meme, for the Black Dahlia murder. I got to admit, the Black Dahlia murder, since they've gotten back out there with Brian on vocals.
Yeah.
Kings of the clown. Social media suave. Social media... what's the word I'm looking for, man?
I don't know, because I'm...
You don't follow social media.
I don't have any social media stuff, but I always, like, those guys have always been funny. Like,
you Brian, should... Yeah. I'll let you get on the Heavy Hole Instagram to watch Black Dahlia Murder's reels, okay? Social media, finessing the social media lately. I really enjoy those guys. I hope someone gives them their own... Get Along Gang style, franchise of children's television shows and things like that. I like what they've been doing lately.
They sounded fantastic when I saw them too, man.
Yeah, yeah. R.I.P. to the boy Trevor, man. But I do love this new era of Black Dahlia Murder and what they're doing. I support it. 100%, man. So, moving on from that, any final thoughts on the crowd killing and this thing?
No, I think, like, if any venue is not into that, you do it graciously by just silently not booking.
I mean, it's California. Aren't there enough cover bands and other styles?
Texas. Was it in Texas?
Was it Texas? I thought it was California. Maybe you're right, man. Maybe I've been dissing California this whole time.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
It is in Fort Worth, Texas, which makes this whole thing even more ridiculous. They're from, like, where Pantera is from. Right,
bro,
and they got a problem with crowd killing. Now I got no. At first I thought this was like California, but now it's like, dude, you're in Fort Worth, Texas, and you're complaining about crowd killing.
There's
like
a genuine "don't mess with Texas" attitude that is very annoying. Little uptight, man. Little uptight. Those folks.
Maybe that's the key. These were non-Texas bands.
Maybe
that's what it was.
And they felt like someone was messing with them.
Hmm. We're going to have to wait to see what kind of reaction Imprecation gets if they ever play their shot to them. You can go back and listen to our interview. Another news item I wanted to bring to your attention. I know I've often played the miserly old cynical Scrooge McDuck, just bitching and moaning about all you thieves stealing my band's music on Spotify and my podcasts on Spotify. Just kidding. Don't throw me off Spotify. And keep listening to our show and listening to my music on Spotify. Snoop Dogg has gotten into the act now. Have you seen this, Tom?
No, this is new to me.
Snoop Dogg has called out streaming platforms for their compensation of artists compared to streams.
Yeah.
I believe his quote was, "How can I get a billion streams and not have made $1 million?" Which, if you do the math, it's a little wonky there. I mean, right? Am I wrong?
Oh, 1,000. So you get
Tom, hit me
one, up. 1/10 of a cent per play.
You don't smoke weed. He did that.
No. I think unfortunately, in the advertising world, a lot of people are like, I don't know, like, the number is, like, it should be that. I agree. Mm-hmm. The money is all fucked up from way back when. The laws written, the umbrella laws about licensing and streaming are all borrowed from the 50s. They're not, like, up-to-date, current at all. They never imagined the idea of streaming when it happened. So the publishers, actually, they do okay.
Yeah.
They're doing a little better, but they're taking a bigger cut somehow, even though the artists are, like, doing all the work. It's strange. Yeah, I remember when...
So really, the same argument people have for restricting the Second Amendment would be the same argument that people would have for fair compensation on streaming platforms. These rules were written long before any of this technology ever existed. That's what people always say, right?
Kind of, yeah. There doesn't seem to be a...
These rules were written before this ever even existed.
Yeah.
The founding fathers never even thought of this, right?
They never thought of it. Yeah,
In the 50s, they never thought of this, streaming platform.
I mean, there's been all kinds of things that are, you know, the internet is fucked. Like, you know, Web 2, what it is now, and just like how much control corporations have over this, like ISPs and all that shit.
Yeah.
It's complicated. But like Section 230 is another one that's kind of like gives a lot of power to the ISPs that really they shouldn't have. Also, a lot of the stuff that happened with the Patriot Act. With the payment processors and all this stuff. They've really, like, they basically have made it very hard for streaming platforms, not streaming, people on streaming platforms to make it viable. I remember reading when the song Get Lucky came out, that Daft Punk song, that very mediocre kind of like Lexapro commercial song they did. That song streamed the first month. They got 100 million streams, and yeah, for that I think the number they got was $26,000.
Yeah,
so it's there is no money in the game.
Well, this is what I'm saying, Tom. I understand it's a necessary evil at this point in time for bands, podcasters,
yeah,
to have their content available, because it's like otherwise you really might be, you should just go back to the old school cult truest way of doing it and just have a couple like 20 photocopy demos and send them out by mail. Cause like you really, everybody does this nowadays and
yeah,
everyone listens to us on Spotify. And it's like, but I'm going to be honest. Now the flip side, my honest opinion.
Yeah.
I do, you know, I surf Facebook and Instagram cause I have the Heavy Hole podcast accounts and some of my bands, I have the account. Mm-hmm. And I see people all the time sharing their Spotify playlists. And mm-hmm, what a lot of people do, I guess there's a screen grab you can get of like the 4 or the 8 albums tiled, you know, their album covers that you've been listening to for the last month, and you see all the album covers there.
And people will
share this on social media. This is what I've been listening to. Mm-hmm. To me, it's almost like they're mocking the artists. It's like a slap in the face to these people that you're proudly proclaiming and showing off that you listen to all my, like they're like at the end of the year, people will show off these like graphs that Spotify gives you of who you listen to the most.
Yeah, I remember
this year.
Yeah.
That's a slap in the face to those artists. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. I mean, yeah, it's not right. You know, like I understand. I mean, dude, if these laws made any sense, like if I made a cent with every 100 yeah, plays that I got, I would be doing pretty well. I did all that WWE shit. Yeah. I did a lot of that stuff, and a lot of them have 20, 30, 40 million plays.
Yeah.
And I have never seen a dime from streaming. I think I may have seen somewhere around $15 to $16 a quarter from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like how does something that I write 100% of, I've been so like beaten down by this, like that I see it like as a giant problem. And there is no, like, we're going to fix this because the way the revenue is collected to begin with is a problem. So because there's so many issues on the foundation of how this was built, it's like, we're asking for insulation in the house so we could stay warm. The fucking foundation is built on sand.
It's hopeless.
It's a giant, yeah, unless, so I would like to see some kind of revolutionary music platform, I think, but people have already been trained to get it for free. So that's the problem. Mm. You're never going to get people off of that.
Can I just say this?
Yeah.
If people do use Spotify to listen to underground metal and music, you know, indie music of any kind where they care about supporting the artist,
yeah,
I don't think they have any right to have an opinion on bootlegs or file sharing.
Because it's the same thing. It is the same thing. Yeah.
You don't have any right to have an opinion about people bootlegging shit or pirating files, because Spotify is just like the legal corporate version of that.
Really. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, and some people get payouts. Like, there's actually a pretty good YouTuber. He's an artist. His name is The Flashbulb, and you can see his stuff on YouTube, and he does talk about like the transparency of like what he makes royalty wise. And he's like, I don't know, he gets like 170,000-ish plays a month, they say, and he's like, that makes me about $1,200-$1,300, and it's like, okay, he owns 100% of his music now. There's no publisher in between. So like, you know, you putting out something with Unique Leader, they are getting a kickback from the streaming services more than you guys are.
This is why a lot of your favorite bands are traveling t-shirt companies.
Yeah, they are. And it's really shitty. And I feel bad.
And now a lot of the venues are even chipping away at that.
Yeah.
By taking which is ridiculous, between 10 and 25% cut of your merch money. They'll count your merch as you come in the building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this,
it's criminal.
Yeah. And now what are they paying these? Now, how much door money are these bands getting in the first place? And you're going to take 25% of their t-shirt money? This is insane.
They're taking it of the gross too.
Oh.
So it's like, it's not like they're doing the math and going, oh, this is a profit you made. Because if you bring 10 shirts in and you sell all 10, you didn't get those 10 shirts for free. You had to pay $12, $15 a clip so you can sell them for $20.
They're chipping away at your investment.
Yeah, and people don't realize that. So I always say, like, if you're in a band and you are going on tour doing this thing, I forgot who told me this, always put merch in your drum bags.
That
always do that because they're fucking you, so fuck them. Fuck them, just... You know, you don't feel bad about doing it.
Unfortunately, the type of venues that are doing this are going to be bloodthirsty enough to start checking all the gear and everything. It's going to get stupid.
Yeah.
It's going to get dumb. I would say, I mean, do your mental math and weigh your odds if you want to lose the 25% or if you want to maybe just try to sell some shirts out of the fucking van. In the parking lot.
Or tell people to go buy online.
Well, yeah, buy online. I would even maybe, you know, I don't know how long you're going to be in town or whatever, but maybe if you work out a deal, maybe there's a local record store or somebody else who's friendly to the scene. Maybe you could work out a deal with them. I don't know, dude, but there you got it. We are going to have to get creative as underground artists with these merch cuts that people are taking, because it's like the corporations already took away record sales. That doesn't exist anymore for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're getting wise to the game that the only way we can get any gas money to get to the next show is selling the t-shirts. And that's why we got to have 10 different t-shirt designs and weed grinders and everything else.
Yeah,
and
all this shit. It's all, like, most of it's garbage. Like, we all know that. And it's like,
most of the fans know it, but they just have such good hearts that they want to support the artists.
Dude, I do it all the time. You know, I'm buying, like, I buy shit and it's like, I don't wear it, most of it.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't feel bad about it. I never feel ripped off from a band who's like, I bought the shirt and it feels like shit.
You just paid their tolls to get out of New York City.
Yeah, dude, you know? Get out of here, you know?
I'm angry now. Okay. Yeah. But
it is really hard out there. And that, I'm bringing back to the Snoop Dogg thing. Okay, you want to hear something fucked up? So Pharrell, he, back in, I think it was 2013 or 14, he decided that he was going to make his own pro, which is like that's what ASCAP is, BMI, everyone's registered to it. If you're putting music out, you're registered through a pro. I think, what was the other one? C something? He fucking hated the fact that they were taking 8% of his shit and doing a terrible job at it, which I've been experiencing too. I mean, I am owed in the conservatively like $80,000, $90,000 because of a bad accounting flaw from Universal Music Registry. And because ASCAP is registered as a nonprofit, they have audit protection. So even though I have like all this blatant paperwork that I have been fucked, I can't do anything about it. There's nothing I can do. They could fix it so it doesn't keep happening, but I can't go back more than 2 years. And in fact, when the audit, we did start auditing them, me, my buddy Mike, and my buddy John, it took forever to get in contact with someone. They moved so slow. It took like a year for them to get us any information. And by the time we were following up with them a year later, the entire team had quit. So there was no one to talk to. So this is like the guise of like nonprofits. Often, if they're dealing with money on that scale, they're a scam. This is ASCAP is a scam. Paul Williams is a charlatan. He's the president, and they steal money. They bring in upwards of $1 billion in revenue a year, and they might dish out like $700 million. And they're a nonprofit. It's fucking crazy. Mm. Anyway,
allegedly,
right. So my point to this, like Snoop Dogg's sentiment and what Pharrell tried to do at one point was he said, hey, I'm going to make my own pro that people can sign up for, and you can only use it if you're making more than $10,000 a year as an entity. So a band could do it. I think you could make that happen. Most bands that have a touring revenue, $10,000, that's, so that was the gate. And you'd pay like $150 a year and they would take care of all your shit, and it was a flat fee. all of a sudden, Pharrell Williams is worth $300 million more, and all talk of making his own pro has disappeared. This is very common in, like, all media industry, where people just, you know, there's a price. Everyone's got a price, man.
All right. All I'm going to say, I'm going to say one thing here, because I could go off on a big tangent, and it's not even involved. It's not, I am not a well-educated man. However, it never ceases to amaze me how few people realize that the popular entertainment industry and our political system run exactly like the mafia.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Mm.
Yeah. Give me.
You could probably find more evidence to back that up than not.
But dude, what's funny is when you talk to people, there are people who really believe in this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get too deep out there, but it's, yeah, corruption, life is corrupt. You know what? Big shout out to my man, Big Frank, man. My uncle Frank, a big old school friend of the family. He's another, not necessarily well-educated man, but much more worldly than me, man. He's an old school street guy from Queens. And one time he told me something, and his big quote that he's always repeated every time I talk to him about something like this: the whole world's a fix. The whole world's a fix. And you know what, man? It sounded cynical and grandiose when he first said it, and exaggerated. The older I get, bro, the whole world is a fix. Whatever you get into, dude, you want to get into death metal and play show? You got to play the game. You got to network with people. You got to.
Yeah.
I've been doing this 25 years, and I still don't have the right connections to get certain places where I want to be.
Yeah, you can't dude? You can't even excel in a passion project because of the amount of hoops you have to jump through, and it's very sad.
It sucks. You know what? And I'll say this too to people who have been doing this for 20, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, longer than me even, who just. And why won't these labels put out my shit? Why can't I get people at my show? Don't feel bad, man, because there's bands that started out last summer that are signed to big labels. I'm not going to call anyone out or name anyone, because some of these bands are good. I'm not shitting on them. And these labels are just playing the game too. It's all a game, bro.
Yeah.
It's all a game. And you got to learn, if you want to be on the same stage as the big bands, if you want to be touring with Black Dahlia Murder and Terror and all these bands, you got to play the game a little bit. That doesn't mean sell out. That doesn't mean that all these bands that do that sold out or softened up. It means they were a little bit savvy with social media.
Yeah, they got smart.
It means they were a little bit savvy with merch. It means they were a little bit professional with playing shows, and whoever these promoters and management people are around these big bands noticed, hey, these guys aren't going to fuck up if I put them on tour. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
Like when I say play the game, I'm talking about that shit. I'm not talking about, you know, selling out or people being social media whores or something. Like before, I talked about Black Dahlia Murder, how I like what they've been doing since they come back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking serious right now, but dude, those guys, they're fucking hilarious. They're funny. They're having fun with it. They're obviously doing it all in honor and tribute of their man Trevor, rest in peace. But it's fun, and they're making it fun for the fans. They got the guy in the gorilla suit out there, the mask. I love it. I love them so much, man. And you know, I've been very upfront too. Like, people who know me would not expect it to be. They're not necessarily my favorite music that I listen to every day in the market of death metal, but it's great. They're a great band. They're talented. They put together a great package, and I love it, man. And you got to look, you know, if you want to be cult and be underground and say fuck society, fuck the shit, that's do it. Do be cult, be underground, but don't be mad 10 years later when you're still, you know, when you're not where you want to be because you didn't take your bands to certain levels and network in a certain way, you know, and level up in a certain way. You know, that's what it's all about. I can look back at my own career and I could tell you 10 different ways I've fucked up over the years.
Yeah, but there is a difference between someone who could like sit down and go, oh, I fucked this up, versus someone who sits there and gets all angry about like this idea of why everything's fucked up. And it's like, you could be mad about it. I'm fucking mad. We're all mad about it. I think most people who listen to death metal come from a place of anger in some place. Some place. But to make that your alma mater, per se, like, this is...
Or hold it inside.
Yeah, like...
Do you know how much I'm... Do you guys know how much I've been holding inside every episode of Heavy Hole Podcast for years now. Oh, man. Oh, my God. Don't be like, I'm not going to name the band. And it's just an 80s metal band from Long Island that did, like, you know, power metal band that didn't do much, man. It's not, but like, I've told this story many times on the podcast. The guy was like manager of a landscaping supply warehouse, you know, in the late 90s after his heyday. And I ended up working with him as my supervisor, and he would just talk about how his band was supposed to open up for Dio in the 80s, and the other guys in the band quit on him or didn't show up. They probably quit because he was being a dick. There he was, like fucking 15 years later, still mad about that, and his whole music trajectory would have been different if they played that show, man. Maybe it would have, maybe not, but like,
probably not.
Dude, don't harp on it, man. What he should have been doing when I was there, what he should have been doing is coming home from the landscaping place and playing his guitar and writing his new album and still sticking it out. Yeah. He could have been positioned well for that type of metal getting more popular through the late 2000s into now, as it has. But, you know, he didn't. Dude, and honestly, I'm glad that I stuck with death metal as long as I have. I never thought it would have this resurgence it's had the last 10 years. I never thought death metal would be popular with hardcore kids in their 20s again, but it is. Yeah. And it's provided me with great opportunities in my bands. I can't be mad at that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You're going to get fucked when you're doing shit. When you open a business, when you do like anything that's not solely for fun, that isn't a walk in the park.
Yeah, and that spot, yeah, being on Spotify, not making any money off it, that's also part of what I'm talking about, dude. Yeah. If I wanted to be that cult guy, and I don't even know if I could convince all my bandmates, but, you know, whatever, if I wanted to keep all my music off of Spotify.
Like,
and
yeah, like Snoop Dogg is on Spotify. He's still making money on it, and it's like,
he's just arguing the point that we should be getting a more fair share from this tool that we're using.
And I think, like, there was, yeah, like, so the only big musical act that I can think of that actively didn't want to be on Spotify for a legitimate reason was Taylor Swift. But she also came to fame in this time where she was able to create an audience out of all the things that were leading up to streaming. The timing was perfect. Her fans are crazy. And she's made it work where she hasn't been on the streaming platforms or Spotify specifically.
But
it's like,
not everyone's Taylor Swift. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. So to think that there is that option, it's just bad thinking. You know, you're not thinking about it in a whole picture.
I got to say, this might contradict some things, but you mentioned Taylor Swift. I am exposed, I'll say, to a lot of pop radio through the years at my job. I work with people. I work with coworkers. I work with people who have disabilities, and generally pop music is a thing that goes on. People have the radio going, people, you know, and when I drive the van too, I'm not playing death metal. I'm usually clicking through the radio stations. My point that I'm getting to, listeners of the Heavy Hole Podcast, I think I might like the new Taylor Swift album.
I heard good things, man.
It's all bangers. All bangers that I've heard on the radio so far. And I gotta say, I can relate to her bitter adversarial viewpoint,
right?
That she has lyrically. Yes, there's something about her cynicism and her bitterness that I identify with when I listen to the lyrics and the themes of the songs.
Didn't she do a fairly dark album? Also, it was like a folkier kind of thing.
I've never paid much attention to her other than her being like some attractive pop. Yeah, she's a pretty girl.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Attractive pop star. But, I, you know, I was never like, this isn't like a long-running thing. It's because the last few months I've heard her like the two or three singles that they've been pushing for her new album. I got to say, compared to the other stuff I hear on pop radio.
Yeah.
It's definitely of a better quality.
Whoever her team is or her herself, they've.
Yeah, I'm not naive enough to think that it's all her. I know that there's like dozens of producers and writers and musicians that are.
I mean, you know, Gab showed me an album cover of the previous album, and I was like surprised. It looked like a Hill Young cover. I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, you mean when she made the tribute to the Burzum album cover with her own album cover? Yeah, practically. Yeah, it's very folksy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, well, it's fine. I didn't know about that till recently. But regardless, you're not Taylor Swift. You're listening to this shit. You're trying to figure out what free guitar plugins you could use on your computer. That's that's not your avenue of avoiding. You're not making a statement if you're nobody and you're avoiding these platforms. Yes. That's all I'm saying. Yes. It's not a fight for you.
Thank you. Thank you on behalf of the listeners for steering me out of that segue that I like. Taylor Swift. Oh boy. Moving on though.
Yeah.
Shout out to Snoop. You know, I haven't been a big fan of Snoop Dogg's output post like 90s. I do like his original era, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I will ride out with Snoop Dogg on this. I think I like the stance he's taken on this.
I agree. Something should change. It's gotta be slowly. Apparently Apple Music pays the artist a lot better. So yeah. If you are very conscious of that and you still need that streaming platform, I would head over to Apple because I think they do pay at like triple the amount.
Fair enough.
It's a lot, but it's still something.
Fair enough. And I'm always going to stick by good old Bandcamp. You can't beat it. They got the Bandcamp Fridays. I mean, pound for pound, if there's a streaming platform that's better for artists than Bandcamp, let me know.
Yeah.
You know,
I honestly don't think so.
Down to merch, all that shit. I mean, it's been great for me and my bands.
Well, the merch, I mean, like, yeah, if you want to own a thing, you have Discogs, right? But that's usually secondary market. That doesn't help the band most of the time.
Yeah, I mean,
I have no problem with that, but you know.
Bandcamp is just so direct. They even give you the Bandcamp Fridays where the band gets all the money. And I can tell, as someone who's in an underground death metal band, several bands where we all work day jobs, no one's living off of this stuff. Like Bandcamp is definitely one of the things that helps keep us going, you know, if utilized right, man. And if you're feeling guilty for listening to this on Spotify, you could always check out my bands on Bandcamp.
Yeah, that's true.
But all kidding aside, man, shout out to the listeners, whether you listen to this on whatever or whatever, I don't care, man. I'm glad you're listening to this and I'm not going to, again, like I'm not Snoop Dogg. I can't take
it. I need to be perfectly clear. I do not view this as the consumer's fault at all.
Yeah.
That would be like, blaming every person who's late to work for the environment going to shit. And not the companies providing it. You know, it's like, well, who's making this shit?
Yeah,
you know, it's like, it's a very complicated area. It's not as simple as that. So, I mean, I use the platforms. I do have that in the back of my mind. I'm not the proudest about it. But that's why I have a bunch of tapes that I've never even fucking opened.
I, every once in a while, if I see an exotic, rare, weird vinyl bootleg, an old metal album that's out of print, allegedly may buy it. Not a lot.
Okay.
And I buy plenty of official format stuff.
You buy enough. You buy enough.
All right.
Things.
So I'll admit I'm not perfect. All right. That's my confession. All right. Shout out to Monsignor Richter. Oh boy. Moving forward. We thank you for bearing with us this episode. We thank you all. Thank all of our voicemailers. Thank Harrison Clark for the suggestion. Thank you, Tom, for bearing with me. Hopefully fixing the computer or at least live streaming it if you have to just take that hammer and destroy it.
I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
Heavy hole. We might go to tape, man. We might. Oh, between the Spotify stuff and the computer fuck-ups.
I guarantee if we start recording by cassette, I can handle all production from there on end. Like you won't. Yeah. If we just go to Tascam 4-tracks, I will edit every podcast from here on
the
end.
Be the best sounding podcast. You're just like, hey guys, hold on.
Only telephone. Yeah. No more Zoom or Skype, too. Only telephone. Oh, God. But if you want to use the telephone and leave us a voicemail, you like that. I still got the segue in me. Hey, the number should be in the description where you're listening to this, probably Spotify. Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts on this wide range of topics that we breached tonight on Heavy Hole Podcast, whichever one it is, or your suggestion, or a new topic, whatever it is, man, for us to talk about next time I fuck up and we lose the interview for the week. We need it.
Yeah, I also want to hear if anyone thinks that these takes are just totally off.
Yeah.
I want to hear that.
I'm wrong a lot of the time in life. I've apologized in life for many things. I've made mistakes. I'm not well educated. That's it, man. HeavyHolePodcast@gmail.com. If you want to shoot us a little email, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and I think we're still on Twitter out there.
I actually gave Sam the credentials.
Yeah, the guy who's like the busiest person we know In 14 bands, professional wrestler.
He's younger than me. He understands the platform. Yeah. I'm like, no,
he definitely understands Twitter better than you or I.
Yeah, so that's why I gave it to him. I trust the man to do it. Well, not that he will do it, but if he does it, he'll do it well.
He's planning on doing it. It's just still on a list of like at that point, he still had all this stuff to do.
Bro, you know? I could at least bother him.
Yeah, this has
been months ago.
Shout out to Sam.
Yeah.
All day. We love Sam, man. The reason you haven't heard my co-host of the podcast to add to his many hats, the reason you haven't heard him in a while, the guy's busy. He's in a lot of bands. He's wrestling. He's a pro wrestler. You know, come on, man. Big shout out to Sam all day, man. Exsanguinated. We're going to be doing some big shit this summer. Check out Exsanguinated on social media. We are constantly adding bookings and shows. We're going to many different areas. Not a full U.S. tour, but we are doing an extensive U.S. tour with many different bands. Go check that out. Anything else, Tom, that I neglected to mention? Big shout out to Justin all day.
Yeah, man.
Justin out there working hard, catching fish.
Getting those YouTube videos up.
Yeah, love Justin. Fish Good NY, if you're interested in quality fishing apparel and gear, lures.
Yeah, man, I got nothing besides that.
Yeah, shout out to all of our other illustrious co-hosts. Dave Gladding, last night, one of the people that I had to cancel with, he's going to go, you know, he has that dry, sarcastic sense of humor too, man. He was like, it's okay, Will, we're all just waiting on you. I'm like sweating on GarageBand trying to figure it out. Oh, man, he can roast me a little more next time I have him on, man. Big shout out to Dave. Shout out to Rick. Shout out to young Ian. Got to get young Ian back on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys went to the Philly Decibel Fest. I had some family issues, so we're getting the schedule back together.
Yeah, we almost had an oopsie there that I'm going to tell you about off camera.
Okay.
Regarding Heavy Hole.
Well, I still want to get you guys in and do like a proper review episode of that fest, even though it's been a week or two.
Yeah, well... we'll talk.
Yeah,
we
had some hiccups in our scheduling from real world bullshit, as always. But we're back now, man. And I want to thank you again, Tom, too. This was almost we almost canceled this week because I had no fucking content, and here we are. So thanks to all the listeners, especially who provided us with voicemails and emails and content for this.
Yeah, dude. I honestly needed the break. I've been just doing cartoon shit all day. And when you hit me up, I was just like, I'm going to make myself have some fun.
I picture Tom just like watching cartoons, but unhappily.
Look at this here.
I know you're doing production.
No, just look at this fucking disgusting show.
Ooh,
isn't that bad?
You're working on some bad stuff.
Yeah, this is. I'm actually just doing a cleanup on this show, and it is the ugliest kid show I've ever seen.
It looks like some sort of like third rate knockoff of that Christian vegetable cartoon show.
Yeah, it's very much in that tier, and it's like I'm working on some good projects, but this one got thrown out. Apparently it was sent to the client like a month and a half ago. I wasn't involved in it at all. And then the client sent it back. They said, why does it sound so bad? So I had to go in and like clean up everything. Okay. It was still direct. I don't know. Anyway, that's the kind of shit I'm staring at all day. A fucking giant rutabaga.
Yeah,
a nightmare papaya tree.
Oh boy, that's like me, man. It looks like me. Oh God, I just give it a pair of glasses. That's me, and that's my little girlfriend there, the yoga lady next, and I'm playing I'm playing her Afterbirth and Exsanguinated, and she's going, why does it sound so bad? Just like your clients. Why does it sound so bad? That's the reaction. No, listen. All kidding aside, man, thanks to you, the listener, for bearing with us this week. I got a lot of exciting interviews booked, and we're going to get them recorded one way or another, come hell or high water, man. So stay tuned to the Heavy Hole podcast coming up in the next few weeks. A lot of great guests on we have our first printing press. I'm not going to say who. I'm going to keep you in the dark on that one. No spoiler. Our first printing press operator.
Nice.
Coming up. We do have, as I promised a few weeks ago, I didn't forget about this, our second Beavis and Butthead music video alumni.
Awesome.
From back in the day. Don't even try to guess. It wasn't one of the easy ones like Guar or Morbid Angel. All right. I would advertise them differently if it was that.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, man. Heavy Hole Podcast. We love you, man. Tom, let's see. We got the voicemails. We got the news. I think that's every last one.